moderator has left the conference.
Namastasye.
evening and good morning. So, and I'm just very delighted looking at everyone's names as they come up on my little list to see that there are quite a few of you from other time zones and other parts of the world other than California, which is where I am at this moment, and to, with enormous love, welcome you to our second class on the goddess, on empowering goddess as ourselves. So I'd like to start in really the, I would say, one of the necessary recognitions for practice with goddess, which is to just create a devotional space for ourselves. So for those of you who are live on the call, this will be kind of a no-brainer. But for those of you who are listening in later, I want you to know that this is an equally significant practice. So we're going to start by just becoming present to the shared space, to the community space that we're all entering into, that we're all a part of in this virtual sangham. So just be present to, just remember, just be open to the recognition that there is this group of souls that have come together for this conversation, each one of whom is a full human being with her or his own history, preoccupations, physicality, happiness, discomfort, joy. Each one of us is a absolutely layered individual. And at the same time, we're sharing a consciousness that is unique to this group, as well as a consciousness that is shared by all beings in this world. And both of these, or all of these, are forms of goddess. So as we open to the sense of each other's presence here, I'd like to ask you to imagine an altar. Imagine that this altar is somehow sitting inside, you probably should close your eyes for this, that this altar is sitting in the center of these rays of consciousness that are each one of us. And though if you can visualize it, that's great, you don't necessarily have to visualize it. Just have the sense that there is this sacred space, this altar, that's in the center of our dialogue, of our conversation. And imagine that each of us, everyone who's tuned in, can somehow view or sense this altar. And your image of the altar may be, have a particular color. It may be golden or red or blue or white. Just notice what color it is for you. Or if it's simply a felt space of sacredness, feel that a candle is lit in the center of the altar and that the rays of the flame in the candle reach out and touch every one of us. And imagine that the altar itself, the flame itself, and the consciousness that you bring to the flame are bringing alive the presence of the goddess, of the Devi, of the sacred Shakti, who exists on multiple layers in multiple universes, who is both the source of all this and who has become all this, and who also lives inside us as the energy of every aspect of what we are and what we experience. And you can inwardly or even using your hands and your body, you can bow to the center, to the altar, to the goddess who is in the midst of all of us. So I was really interested and delighted to read the different ways that you guys were sharing your experience of last week's class, and I apologize for calling you guys. It's a peculiarly American form of address, which I think I have used my whole life to refer to people in feminine bodies and masculine bodies, but which is normally understood as a masculine noun. So let me change that and to say that I've been very interested to read the different ways that all of you, or many of you, have been sharing your experience of the Durga quality in the universe. Someone wrote to say that she was feeling very centered and empowered. Somebody else wrote to say that they are experiencing a lot of upheaval, which is something that I recognize as the goddess's purifying power, which will often bring up feelings like anxiety and fear as the space is cleared, because that is one of the things that Goddess Durga does within us. When we activate her, she starts to clear the space such that the obstructive emotions that keep us from actually seeing the divine presence, the light that is what we are, that these obstructions begin to be removed. And of course, we've also had the experience of looking at the events on the border between the U.S. and Mexico and feeling the Durga energy arising in so many of us, feeling the anger, the heartbreak that comes to us when we see something really, really painful going on in the world. And one of the things that came up for me as I've been reading about this and experiencing my own pain is the undeniable truth that this world and the goddess who has become this world is not always nice. And though even though her nature is love and her activity is love, nonetheless, in the event, it often is not experienced as loving by the people who are, let's say, caught in one of the aspects of her activity in the world, which is the aspect of dissolution or destruction. The contemporary thinker Howard Bloom, whom I've been reading recently, he's an evolutionary thinker, and one of the things he says is that evolution, this process of evolution, which we've come to believe runs not just through the physical world, but also through cultures and through human beings. He says that that evolution favors not necessarily individual organisms, but what he calls superorganisms, which are species and cultures, and I'm not going to try and explain what he's talking about, but to put it very simply, it's this same process that makes the cells in our body die so that the body can be rejuvenated by the birth of new cells. And of course we know this. We know that death is necessary in order for life to happen. We know, most of us, that we have a different body every 2 or 3 years because our cells replace themselves. And yet, from the point of view of the individual cell, there's a lot of cruelty in that. And the explanations of why that cruelty is necessary, not in the case of the cells, but in the case of the animals, the humans, the situations that are often violently disturbed in the process of life. It's very often very, very hard to make sense of it. And I want to tell us very briefly a story that I heard from Douglas Brooks, who's a tantric teacher, who many of you know and some of you have studied with. And it's a story from the Vedas it's a myth from the Vedas about the two gods, Indra and Rudra. And Indra, as many of you know, because he shows up in a lot of these stories, is the king of the devas, the light beings, the good guys in the cosmos. And at one point, he discovers that a goddess named Diti is pregnant by a member of the Asura species, who are, they're sometimes called the power gods, and they're sometimes called demons. They are the enemies of the devas. And this goddess is pregnant by a famous Asura, and there are 100 babies in her womb. So Indra decides that if these children get born, that they will overrun the world and become an army which will defeat the gods. So he decides to take preemptive action. He shrinks himself to a very small form, enters the womb of the goddess Diti, and kills all the babies. And as it happens, which is, you know, a horrifying image and a horrifying thing to contemplate, and as it happens, Shiva, in his form as Rudra and with his all-seeing eye, sees this happening, and he's so overwhelmed with grief that he begins to howl. The name Rudra literally means the howler, and it's the name that he took on at that moment, that he became a utterly grief-stricken witness to Indra's act of multiple murder. And in the end, I just, you know, Indra had to do severe penance for what he did. At the same time, you know, as leaders sometimes do, he felt that he'd done the right thing. And yet it was terrible. So to some extent in the tantric universe, we face up to the horror that goes on in the world, and we have to howl. It's part of the nature of reality that we have to recognize that things happen, terrible things happen, that sometimes there's nothing we can do to change them, and yet we must speak, we must cry, we must howl, we must allow ourselves to experience our protest at the horror. So when we realize that even when we are connected to protective goddesses like Durga, rescue doesn't always come, because the divine feminine is not only a nurturer, she's also a destroyer. There are forms of goddess that are aggressive and cruel. And so to say that divine love weaves the tapestry of the worlds and interpenetrates everything is also to say that the horrors are interpenetrated with divine love, and that each one of us who wants to understand the world and understand ourselves, which is, of course, extremely significant teaching of Tantra, we have to be able to hold this dual consciousness that horror is horror and yet that love is omnipresent. So we don't, you know, we're not let out of our responsibility to be the best person morally and ethically. We're not let out of our responsibility to do what we can. But we're also not let out of the responsibility to recognize that reality is what it is. Things are as they are. The world is as it is. Also to recognize, and this brings us back to Goddess Durga, that part of the process that the fierce goddesses like Durga and Kali and others, midwife in us, are awakenings of all kinds. and that one of the vehicles through which awakening happens is a recognition of the fact that this universe is not like a Disney movie with, you know, a lot of little pink rats dancing on garbage cans. It's something else. And one of the reasons that we need fierceness in order to awaken out of the inertia of our embeddedness in the universe of duality, one of the reasons we need fierceness is because it's a very big deal to wake up. The forces of inertia, the forces of the goddesses Maya, are very strong. They literally, you know, I think of it as having a hand on your head that keeps you from seeing the big picture, from feeling into the wholeness. And so we need the power of the fierce goddesses to break that cycle, to break through the ceiling. You know, it's literally the ceiling of Maya that keeps us from recognizing what we really are. So as we move on to one of the loving, embracive, motherly, you know, recognizably motherly goddesses, the goddess Bhuvaneshwari, I just want to take a couple of minutes to do a practice with the mantra of Goddess Durga that we've been working with throughout the week. The mantra, Om Dum Durgaye Namaha. So as you sit, let yourself follow the breath, feel into the power of the breath flowing through your body. Feel into the energy around your heart and begin to say to yourself, silently or out loud, Om Dum Durgaye Namaha. Om Dum Durgaye Namaha. Om Dum Durgaye Namaha. Imagine that you offer this mantra into the altar that we've imaginatively constructed in the center of this circle. And as you offer the mantra, as you imagine that your inner recitation of the mantra impacts not only your own heart, but this big heart, this altar, this heart in the form of an altar that unites us here. And then make a prayer. Ask that our practice be aligned with the highest good, not only of each other, not only of ourselves, but for the highest good of this world, for the benefit of all beings. And then we'll chant the mantras aloud 9 times. Om Dum Durgaye Namaha. 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 Aum Dum Durgaye Namaha. Aum Dum Durgaye Namaha. Aum Dum Durgaye Namaha. Aum Dum Durgaye Namaha. And now imagine that the mantras Om Dum Durgaye Namaha are breathed in drawn into the body with the inhalation, and then with the exhalation, see if you can feel the mantras flowing through your entire body. The mantras of the goddess Durga are utterly filled, completely saturated with the alive, vibrant energy of a form of the divine feminine who is not only at the heart of reality, but who holds all of her powers within herself. So feel that as you allow the mantra to flow with your breath and begin to flow inside your inner body, inside your energy body, recognize that these sounds are gradually empowering you with the goddess's fiery, light-filled strength, her protective power, her utter commitment to truth. This week we'll be tuning into the form of goddess who, in my experience, actually holds space for change, for self-reinvention, for the process of inner transformation, and for the very process of creativity. This is Bhuvaneshwari, who is literally the potency of creative space. And we're going to be practicing with Bhuvaneshwari's mantra this week. And what I'd like you to consider is how the energy in the Durga mantra and the energy in the Bhuvaneshwari mantra feel inside your inner body. Because at the heart of tantric practice, somebody asked the question, how do we connect more deeply to these goddesses? There are several ways, and we'll be speaking about that as class goes on. But the way that that the tantric texts really consider the highest, the deepest, the most direct of all the practices for getting in touch with Shakti is through these mantras, which are filled with the practice of literally generations and generations, millennia of practitioners, but which also come from the higher realms, come from the realms beyond Maya, the realms where goddess lives in pure light forms before dissolving into the formless. And these mantras are considered to be the sound forms of these deities, a fact that sounds completely far-fetched, like a form of fantasy or religious dogma, until you actually start to experience how the mantras that we practice start to come alive in us and give us a unique experience of sacred energy that is connected to all other forms of sacred energy, but which actually carries a unique emotional and subtle energetic signature that we begin to recognize as the qualities within this particular goddess form. So in my own practice, I very often practice Om Dum Durgaye Namaha when I really want to activate myself and energize myself. I will practice Bhuvaneshwari mantras at times when I'm wanting to sink into a deep meditative state or simply experience relaxation, because Durga is the Shakti who gives us the strength to awaken to our deeper possibilities, to literally cast aside the shadowy qualities that hide our light from us. Bhuvaneshwari is the Shakti who holds space for the qualities of our shadowy self to be transmuted, and who also forms a kind of cocoon for transforming reality from within. And one of the ways we'll work with Goddess this week is with the practice of holding space for emotions like anxiety and fear by seeing them as part of the display of Goddess, but also by literally allowing our own awareness, our own consciousness, our own energy field to become the space holder within which the energies that move through our body and mind can be resolved, can be opened, can become helpful, can become growth producing. One of the great religious anthropologists of the 20th century, Jean Gebzer, or Gebze, I've never heard his name said out loud, he was French, and he created a paradigm about the way societies evolve, and it's a paradigm that's very close to the way humans evolve, and many of you are aware of it. It specifically relates to the way we experience deity, the way we experience goddess particularly, and in his formulation, the earliest relationship that human beings had to the world and to the Divine Mother was, he calls it archaic, and it comes out of a period of time in which in which human beings felt themselves to be completely embedded in the natural world, and in which that, you know, our technology was not up to what it is now, obviously. Human beings in the archaic period, according to what we have of those times, really understood the natural world as the full expression of goddess and themselves as a part of it. And so their relationship to goddess was deeply and naturally intimate. You know, they saw her as the land they lived on. They experienced her as the wind in the trees. And they also experienced her as the thunderstorm and the forest fire, as the death of the child, and as both the beauty and the difficulty of living in the world. So, and, you know, according to this formulation, as human individuals begin to disembed, begin to experience themselves as unique and separate from the land and their communities, the understanding about who goddess is, about who deity is, also changes. And the individuated human begins to see deities as magical beings who can be invoked for help, who can be invoked for favoring your projects and disfavoring your enemies' projects. There are, in fact, at this time in human history, there are many, many deities, especially goddesses, who are invoked to, for example, destroy your enemies or to support you in war. And as societies evolved and as societies became more organized, eventually organized into cities and eventually states, goddess often became the communal deity, the protective deity of the city or the protective deity of the nation, as in Athena in ancient Athens, who was the goddess of the city, the goddess Ashara was the deity of many of the Babylonian and Sumerian states, goddess Ishtar, as Isis was so incredibly significant for the Egyptian culture at a certain point. And, you know, as, so as as societies mature and as individuals mature through these different structure stages, there comes a stage in which human beings are so have discovered their separateness, or have begun to feel their separateness from the world around them so strongly, that we also begin to doubt the power of deities. We understand the world from a scientific viewpoint. We begin to look at deity practices somewhat superstitious, and if we are psychologically acute, we may have the view of A. Joseph Campbell about the power and importance of myth as an organizing force in society, or of the power of archetypes to help us understand ourselves. And then there's a point beyond that, which is, I feel, that the postmodern tantric understanding of deity, which I believe many of us share. And it rests on a couple of understandings. First, the recognition that deities are not something outside us, but are also within us. And a kind of commitment to recognizing the divine qualities inside ourselves, to really integrating our human self with the larger sacred field in which we live. And this more integral expression of the understanding of sacred energies is it's a step beyond the other stages. But what is really important to understand is that for all of us, all of these different stages of understanding about deity are embedded in us like the strata of, like the geological strata of the earth. We all have this, we are all in part creatures who are able to recognize our embeddedness in the natural world. We all invoke higher energies in order to improve our situation. We all are rationalists who go, maybe this is all superstitious, or I don't get it. And maybe there is no such thing as sacred energy because everything can be explained by scientific principles. We are all interested in the way deity archetypes can express aspects of the world and the human personality. And we are also, more and more of us, beginning to be aware of our own sacred divine nature and of the way in which our connection to a deity form, to a higher power, can actually transmute and enliven and vitalize and sacralize, make sacred our own human experience. It's what Andrew Harvey calls the divine human, the human divine. So as we approach Bhuvaneshwari, I find that it's extremely skillful to see her as a manifestation of the physical world. She's embedded in the physical world. To see her as a deity you can call on for love and protection. I call Bhuvaneshwari the goddess who has your back, and we'll do a practice with that. And also to recognize that she expresses herself, especially as, as our spiritual growth deepens. She expresses herself as some of the most profound and powerful aspects of divine compassion that we can hold in ourselves. So, just some of the names of goddess. One of the important aspects of the goddess Bhuvaneshwari, whose name literally means she who is the space that holds the worlds, she who is the sacred spaciousness of creativity. She's also, Bhuvaneshwari is one of the names in which the mythic great goddess, the great goddess that that Ernest Neumann and other 20th century Jungians spoke about. Bhuvaneshwari is also a a very popular and powerful form of the great goddess, of that, you know, the divine mother who you see in the caves, the 40,000-year-old caves at Charvet that we spoke about last time. And what's interesting about Bhuvaneshwari is that though she's sometimes seen as part of a group of goddesses who are connected to Shiva, who, in other words, who are forms of Shiva's divine consort, variously known as Parvati, as Durga, and even as Kali, Bhuvaneshwari is usually understood to be unpartnered. She's an independent goddess. She doesn't have a husband. She doesn't have a boyfriend. She's the divine feminine as the creator, sustainer, and destroyer of the universe. So Bhuvana means the subtle essence of the manifest world. Ishwari means lady or mistress. It's the feminine form of the Sanskrit word Ishwara. And one of the ways that we address goddess is as lady, which, of course, doesn't sound so good in English. But she is the very essence of the lady at the heart of creation. And she has some other names, which I'm just going to say, and you can roll them over in your mind. Sarva Rupa, she who is the form of all. Many, many hymns to the goddess are actually recitations of her sacred names. Vishwarupa, she whose form is the universe. Prapancheshwari. Prapancha means the five elements, earth, air, fire, water, and space. So Prapancheshwari is the lady who has become all the elements of the world. She's the mistress of the elemental world. Whatever is knowable is she herself. And Bhuvaneshwari could also be identified with Chitti Shakti, whom those of you who were with us on the course on the Your Heart is the Divine Heart, the class on the Pratyabhijna Hridayam, the Doctrine of Recognition, with its amazing sutra, which says, in supreme freedom, Chitti Shakti manifests this universe within herself upon her own screen. Bhuvaneshwari is a form of that creative Shakti, that field of awareness within which all worlds manifest. So I want to speak about her a little bit in her personal form, and we're going to invoke her in her personal form. This is the way I like to describe her, and there's also a painting that I sent to those of you who actually had a chance to open your email, and which Deb has put up on the homepage of the course, for the course. Bhuvaneshwari is red. The color red is it's the color of creativity. It's the color of passion. It's the color of the goddess in her creative form. She's often described as shining like the dawn sky. And her hair is dark. It hangs in waves down her back. She has, of course, large motherly breasts. She has four hands, and her hands hold, two of her hands hold implements, and in some of her representations, she's also shown holding a bowl of jewels, which signifies her extreme auspiciousness and her boon-granting power. But the two hands which hold a goad, which is that implement that in India and other places is, it's like it's a kind of a hook with a sharp end that elephant trainers use to make an elephant move. It's quite a nasty implement. And she also holds a noose or a lasso, which are both very, very, very powerful implements that show up in many, many, like, you know, in many of the icons of the tantric goddesses. The goad represents the power of Shakti to drive us forward. to its, it represents this, the fact that most being living beings are stuck on the wheel of samsara, the endless, repetitive nature of life in which we're driven to do the same things over and over again, regardless of whether they're helpful or freeing or even make us feel good. So that the goad is represents the fact that she has us on the wheel and that we can't really get off the wheel on our own, which, as you know, is an important aspect of the teachings of Goddess. But like all the implements of these beings, it has a double meaning. The goad is also the wake-up call that suffering offers us. In other words, because we suffer on this planet, because life here is not just one Disney movie with pink rats dancing on garbage cans, our suffering has the potential to wake us up to the opportunity that we're being given to transform, to see the truth. So in a certain sense, the presence of the goat in Bhuvaneshwari's hands describes why suffering is so important in the evolution of human beings and indeed of all species, because it is that suffering which inspires us to transformation, to growth. The noose, the lasso, has a similar double meaning. It represents the power that that keeps us stuck. It also represents the power that by which the goddess holds us to her, by which she binds us to her. Once we've woken up to her presence, once we've started to invoke her, there's a saying that, you know, she throws her noose around our neck and she pulls us along through all of the different experiences of our life until eventually we discover who we really are. And so the goddess's noose is actually her way of holding on to us. There's an old Hasidic story. Not even a story, actually. It's an anecdote about an old man who was seen in front of the altar in the synagogue, prostrate in front of the altar, saying, "Oh, Lord, I can't do this on my own. Please, Lord, drag me. Schlep me is the word, the Yiddish word. Schlep me to yourself." And that's what the goddess's noose represents. So her two lower hands, the left hand is raised in palms out gesture, which is called Abhaya Mudra, which means fear not, and we saw it on Goddess Durga as well. Don't be afraid of the universe. She is don't be afraid of me. It's also saying, I've discovered it, and this is really important, just check this, don't be afraid of your own mind. Don't be afraid of your own emotions. Don't be afraid of your own shadow. In other words, I will protect you. I will show you the truth about yourself. It's okay to look directly into the face of reality because I am always protecting you. And the second gesture, in which you see the hand, the open-palmed hand facing down, is the gesture of bestowing boons, bestowing grace, bestowing gifts. So, and this is a very, very significant part of the iconography of the goddess Bhuvaneshwari, as of a whole group of goddesses, including Lakshmi, whom we'll be visiting later on in the class. These goddesses are, you know, they're generally known as the beautiful, benign, motherly, lover-like goddesses who give boons. And in fact, Bhuvaneshwari, if you go on the internet, if you go on YouTube and you know, type in Bhuvaneshwari, you'll see an entire protocol for bringing wealth into your life, for bringing abundance into your life, which is centered on the goddess Bhuvaneshwari's mantra. So Bhuvaneshwari is the source of worldly blessings. Essentially what this form says is that she'll give you whatever you need and want to make your life sweet, and she'll also bestow on you the greatest blessing, which is the power to know the truth in the world. One of my all-time favorite stories about contemporary spiritual masters is the story that's told about Sai Baba of Shirdi, who lived in the late 19th and early 20th centuries in a very small town in western India, and was known for cures, for, you know, miracles, for basically being someone that impoverished people could go to, ask for help, and he would manifest a miracle for them. And he was also a very high teacher. He was a very, very profound knower of the truth. One of his serious disciples, one of spiritually committed disciples, once asked him why he gave all these favors to anyone who came to him. He said, "I give people what they want so that they eventually will ask for what I can really give them." And this is exactly what Bhuvaneshwari is showing us with her boon-creating gesture. It's said that she's so beautiful that Shiva grew a third eye just to look at her. And this is interesting for a couple of reasons. First, because the third eye is the eye of inner wisdom, and what it implies to me is that we actually need inner wisdom to see through the appearance of this world, to see the beauty of this cosmos as the divine splendor that it really is. And the second thing that's interesting about this story has to do with who Shiva is, because Shiva, of course, is famously ascetic. You know, he's a renunciate. He's not interested in women, at least in one of his forms. He represents freedom disengaged from the world. But because Bhuvaneshwari is so beautiful, he falls in love with the world. He falls in love with her as the world. And Bhuvaneshwari also has a third eye. She has a vertical, open third eye in the center of her forehead. And one of the things that's said about her is that with her open third eye, she watches over all of us. So we're going to just take a few moments to begin to unfold our Bhuvaneshwari practice. And we'll practice with a mantra and with my favorite way of invoking Bhuvaneshwari, which is to imagine her as a loving, motherly presence who embraces us from behind. Many of you have done this practice with me. It is, I think, specifically a practice that is empowered by Bhuvaneshwari, by this particular form of the Divine Feminine. So please close your eyes. Find a posture that feels comfortable. And in finding the posture, I love to encourage you to feel into the sacred triangle, which is really another of the forms of goddess. The sacred triangle that's formed by the two sits bones, those two protruding bones in your buttocks, and the pubic bone in the front, which these three bones literally form a triangle. And if you sit with the awareness of this triangle as you're at your base, and feel that your attention flows from the center of the triangle, of these three bones, up through the center of your body, through the crown, you'll find that your upper body is very naturally aligned. And you can actually breathe in vertically. You can let your inhalation flow down vertically and connect you to the space between the two sits bones and the pubic bone, which is, there are, of course, organs there, including our genitals and the perineum, which is a sort of soft tissue focal point for those of us who practice with Kundalini at the base of the Muladhara Chakra. But in this practice, you can just feel as though between the pubic bone and the two sits bones, there's a space. There's an open space, the center of the triangle. The triangle represents the cosmic yoni. And this is one of the names of Bhuvaneshwari. She is the cosmic yoni, the great vagina out of which the world emerges. So see if you can center yourself over the space in the middle of the triangle at the base of your body. And feel the breath flowing in and down and then flowing out and up. The chant that the mantra that we'll be practicing with is Om Shrim Hrim Shrim Bhuvaneshwaryai Namaha. Om Shrim Hrim Shrim Bhuvaneshwaryai Namaha. It takes a little while to get into it, and I just want to say that if this feels like too much mantra, that you can just practice with the mantra Hrim. So I'm going to begin chanting and you can chant with me. Om, of course, is the vibratory rolling sound of creation itself, the sound that endlessly reverberates through the world. Hrim embodies the creative manifesting power of Shakti, as well as the power that pierces the veils of dullness and injects new life into our bodies and the universe. And it's also the sound that I've always felt holds the joy of Shakti as she brings worlds into existence. Shrim is the mantra of pure auspiciousness, pure joy, pure beauty and goodness. And one of the names for Bhuvaneshwari is Shri, which is an honorific, of course, as many of you know, that indicates her absolute the veneration that we have for her. Namaha means it's usually translated as I bow to, but it indicates a surrender of your discursive mind. So a recognition of her, of the beauty and power of the divine force. So I'll say the words a few times and you can hook into them, saying them out loud or just finding them in yourself. Om Shrim Hrim Shrim Bhuvaneshwaryai Namaha. So there are two shrims. Om Shrim Shrim, Shrim, Bhuvaneshwaryai Namaha. Double auspiciousness. Om, Shrim, 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 Bhuvaneshwaryai Namaha. Om, Shrim, 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 Bhuvaneshwaryai Namaha. Om, Shrim, 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 Bhuvaneshwaryai Namaha. Om Shrim Hrim Shrim Bhuvaneshwaryai Namaha. Om Shrim Hrim Shrim Bhuvaneshwaryai Namaha. And what we're actually doing is that if we were to translate the mantras, they would say Om creativity, Om auspiciousness, creativity, auspiciousness. We bow to that one who is the divine spaciousness within which all exists. Om Shrim Hrim Shrim Bhuvaneshwaryai Namaha. 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 And see if you can just allow the sound of the mantra to flow with the breath. Om Shrim Hrim Shrim Bhuvaneshwaryai Namaha. Flowing down through the center of the body, down to the space within the triangle at the base, and then with the exhalation flowing up into the heart. Om Shrim Hrim Shrim Bhuvaneshwaryai Namaha. Om Shrim Hrim Shrim Bhuvaneshwaryai Namaha. And as the exhalation flows into the heart with the mantra, feel as though the breath and the mantra begins to open the space of the heart, reverberate through the heart, so that such that the space of the heart opens to the front, to the sides, and to the back. Feel as though your heart expands. Feel as though the presence of the goddess Bhuvaneshwari, her color the red of a sunrise, her energy filled with love, with motherly affection, with tenderness, with beauty. Feel that she holds you from behind, and that as your heart expands, it's as though you're offering your heart and your being into the protective embrace of the goddess behind you. As you invoke her, Om Shrim Hrim Shrim Bhuvaneshwaryai Namaha. See if you can begin to feel as though the mantra is actually being chanted or being spoken by the goddess Shakti behind you, so that it's she herself who is speaking these words which express her being. So you might imagine that the sound of the mantras is flowing from goddess behind you, flowing through your body. Flowing into the heart and then expanding through the body above, below, to each side. Now, as you inhale and exhale the mantras of the goddess, as you sense her presence behind you, In just a moment, I'm going to ask you to open your eyes and see if you can look at the world that appears in front of you or around you as the expression of her, feeling as though you are looking from behind your physical body, that you're looking from the point of view of Bhuvaneshwari, of the goddess. So your own body is a kind of transparent screen through which she looks out at the world. And as she looks out at the world, she's looking from the point of view of the most cozy, intimate experience of the universe within her own body. This presence whom you are invoking at your back and whom you are, for these few moments, allowing to see through you, what she is seeing and what she invites you to see is that all of this is contained within her. And what you may perhaps begin to get a hint of is the profound feeling of acceptance, of total tender acceptance, that is Bhuvaneshwari. She holds everything. She loves all of it. She's intimate with all of it because it's all her. And her intention is for every particle of this universe to recognize itself as her. So she's literally holding space for you to see what this universe is, to see the sacredness of this universe, and to see the sacredness that you hold. To recognize that you are a part of Goddess, and you also are Goddess. That last recognition may be so big that it's hard to hold, but it is the truth. And I want to tell you a story that it's not really a story, it's an experience that a friend shared with me a few months ago. She was in the middle of an ongoing, very difficult relationship with one of the officials at her child's school, actually, who was giving her child a really hard time and giving her a really hard time. And she was confused, my friend was confused, angry, upset, kind of stuck. And one day, as she was trying to kind of come to terms, trying to figure out a strategy that would allow her to deal with this, she went into meditation, and in meditation, she actually had a brief but very powerful vision of herself being held inside a kind of field of golden space. It was like she saw herself being held in a sky that she saw was her own awareness. In other words, that she experienced how her personal empirical embodied self, with all of its current problems, was actually being held inside a much larger self that she saw as her deeper, wider consciousness, her deeper, wider awareness. And then she, just for a moment, just for a flash, she saw this other person inside this field. And had an intuition which which I feel was really the revelation that changed her whole experience of this whole event. She had the revelation that this person that she basically couldn't stand, who was giving her such a hard time, was also part of this same field. And then in the midst of it came a voice which said something like this. I'm not quoting it exactly, but this was the gist. She said, whatever you're experiencing is being offered to you by your own sacred awareness in order for you to process karmic issues. And the only way you can process these issues is if this situation shows up and appears to be outside you. And the voice went on to say, it is not really outside you. This whole situation is taking place inside your own consciousness. It is your own projection, and it is a gift for your self-recognition. And then the meditation ended, the vision ended. She was, you know, back in her body, her life, her sense of separation. But her whole attitude about the events had shifted because she had been shown, and I think this recognition has stayed with her, that no matter what she thinks in any given moment, that the conflicts that she's working through are part of the gift of self-awareness that is being offered to her by the goddess who is manifesting as her. So this to me is one of the big insights that connecting to the Bhuvaneshwari energy can allow us to open up for ourselves. In other words, Bhuvaneshwari is the goddess of space. She's the goddess of awareness. She's the one who holds all this. She's sometimes called, as we said earlier, Sarvarupa, the one who is the form of all. And the recognition that she begins to unfold for us is the recognition that every single particle of our own awareness and every single particle of what appears for us, because, you know, as neuroscience has been telling us for around 50 years, the world that we see and experience is not actually what it looks like. It's actually being mediated through our nervous system, so that the way we're experiencing what appears outside of us is perhaps distorted, but certainly being programmed for us by the way our nervous system has set up this experience of me inside, you outside. So Bhuvaneshwari is, once we start to even hold for a few moments the idea that she has become all this, it starts to change the way we look at everything, and including most of our problems. So I just want to say a prayer, which you also have received, so you can say it along with me, just to invoke her. O compassionate one, you who hold the universe in your embrace, you are the life within my life, the breath within my breath. I invoke you as Bhuvaneshwari, the supreme queen of the cosmos. You become the inner and outer worlds. You are the dynamic spaciousness within which all life exists. You are the space within my own heart, and you are the field of creative possibility within my mind. I ask to be held in your embrace. course, the great image of Bhuvaneshwari is as the cosmic womb, as the one of the great images of the Indian tradition. It's said that the goddess is like the spider who spins her web and then lives inside it. The web is spun out of the body of the spider and then appears to be outside the spider, but actually she's living in every particle of the web. And if, with your eyes closed, and this sense of goddess at your back, this sense of Bhuvaneshwari at your back, what I'd like to ask you to do is simply look into the space that appears in front of your eyes when they're closed. And this is actually a kind of a radical exercise, because normally when we close our eyes, it becomes a signal to think or to imagine something. But what we're doing right now is we're just looking into the field that appears when our eyes are closed. And for most of us, that field actually looks like, might have a color. I'm seeing it as kind of a pinkish red right now. It might look gray, but if you look at it carefully, you see that there's movement in it. There's a kind of a dynamism in it. And as you look more deeply into your own mind, you start to see that it is actually a kind of a field of vibrating energy, and that thoughts and images and sounds, of course, are arising in this field. See if you can stay present to the sense of looking into the... I use the word field because I don't really know another word to describe it, the kind of mind stuff, the visual that appears in front of your eyes when your eyes are closed. And perhaps you can start to notice how, as you look into this field, that thoughts arise, and I know that my voice is dominating your experience, but I'm going to shut up in a minute and let you just look. That thoughts arise or impressions arise and they take over the mind. But they also dissolve in the mind. And when we turn in, when we turn inside, when we shift our awareness from paying attention to what's going on outside the body to paying attention to the awareness field that is always the screen within which our experience is appearing, you might start to see how this field of mind stuff is constantly creating stuff. It's creating thoughts, it's creating images, it's creating colors, it's creating little squiblets of energy. It's literally creating worlds inside itself. As you know, when we sit for meditation and our mind is no longer focused outside, one thing that happens is that we become hyper-conscious of the creations of the mind, the movements of the mind. And if you are willing to see the movements of the mind as the creative flow of goddess manifesting as your mind, which is actually what the tantras say, you know, your mind is the microcosm of the vast creative mind of goddess. See if you can notice how, in the space of silence when I shut up for a second, it's possible to actually look directly through the thoughts and start to get a sense of the suchness itself. And at this point, it might become skillful, might become a good idea to tune into the mantra, Om Shrim Hrim Shrim, Om Shrim Hrim Shrim. We're just going to practice with the seed syllables, Om Shrim Hrim Shrim. Letting the energy in the syllables become the dominant thought in the mind. And as the mind begins to become a little bit more still, a little bit transformed by the mantra, offer into it the seed of a question. What does Goddess want to create through me, through this body-mind, at this time in my life? What does Goddess want to create through this body-mind at this time in my life? Just offer the question into the mind field. Don't try to think about it. Offer the question, just repeat it 2 or 3 times, no more. Perhaps something has arisen, perhaps nothing. What you're doing as you look into the mind field with the intention to recognize it as holding the creative power of Goddess in microcosmic form, because that is what the mind is. You practice a kind of surrender in which you allow that power that has become your mind to make the choice as to what wants to be or needs to be created through you at this time. And it could be anything. It could be a project. It could also be a moment of rest or meditation. And then come back to the mantra. Om Shrim Hrim Shrim. If you have a notebook and it feels right and something arose, you might want to write it down. And if not, I'm going to suggest that you just be aware, be alert to the way in which, having seeded this question into the infinitely creative field of your own mind, and it really is, with the awareness that it's Goddess's field, that hints and recognitions are going to start to emerge. So one of the qualities of the Bhuvaneshwari energy within us and in the world itself is that in a certain sense she is the incubator. That is, her creative spaciousness, her creative imagination, because that is really what Bhuvaneshwari is. She is the divine power of imagination out of which all things are created. There's actually a story which I'm just gonna tell for a moment before we get to a deeper point, or not that it's a deeper point, not that the story is less deep, but the story is more of a mythic description of a situation, and we want to get to a practical application of it. So the story goes, the myth goes, this is from the Srimad Devi Bhagavatam, which is a text that describes reality as it looks to Goddess. In other words, it's a text that considers the Devi, the Goddess, to be the supreme form of divinity. And so the way the stories are told in it is slightly different from the way the myths that make a male deity the center. So in this story, worlds are not born yet. Brahma, who's the creator, and his two friends, Vishnu and Shiva, are floating in the ocean of consciousness, and they're having a conversation. And the conversation is about which one of them is more important. If you know Indian mythology, you know that this story is told in several different forms. And Brahma is saying, well, I'm the one who creates the worlds. And Vishnu is saying, well, I'm the one who maintains them. And Shiva is saying, well, if I don't destroy them, there'll be no room for anything. And suddenly, you know how this story goes, of course, suddenly out of the ocean appears a radiant ball of red gold light. It's the form of the goddess Bhuvaneshwari. She's made of sunlight. That's the way she's described. Her eyes are vast. She's covered in beautiful red silk. And as they look at her and they're kind of blown away by her, this is the moment when Shiva grows a third eye in order to look at her. She says, would you like to come with me? And of course they are totally smitten. They say yes. So she manifests a jeweled chariot. They sit in the chariot, and then they ascend through thousands of worlds, through many different subtle realms, until they find themselves in the goddess Bhuvaneshwari's mythic abode, which is called the Island of Jewels. And they see her there, seated on a throne, and they see in her body hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of universes. Millions of universes just rising and falling inside her sacred body, and they realize that they are simply her agents, that they create, preserve, and dissolve universes through her power. And the interesting thing about this story from, you know, a kind of cultural point of view is that they discover as they're standing before her awestruck that their male bodies have become female bodies. They've become female attendants of the goddess. And they say to her, and this is a big surrender for a male god in the culture that they came from, we will be so happy to be in female bodies forever if that means we can stay at your feet and serve you. So in a certain sense, the ultimate surrender on the part of these major deities is to be willing to enjoy being attendants of the goddess. And in that moment, as they become conscious of who she is and what she is holding, they become like you and I, as we recognize that everything that allows us to function as human beings is being held by her in this vast spaciousness which holds all that is and all that ever could be, and that is filled with joy and presence and her unconditional regard for us, to use Carl Rogers' phrase. And what this story, what the commentary in this story tells us is that what is actually happening here is that they are experiencing what it is to be a child of the mother, because this is what a mother does. She holds the space that allows the child to live and grow. And in developmental psychology, this is called the holding environment, which is, it's simply the, you know, the, I would say at its heart, assuming the parents are also taking care of the physical needs of the child, the holding environment is the regard, the affection, the trustableness that the parent is able to manifest. And the point here is that there's something in the very nature of awareness. There's something in the very nature of reality that allows growth and existence, and that it has to do with the fundamentally positive attitude that consciousness has towards everything within it. So Goddess Bhuvaneshwari, in a certain sense, is that which creates for us and for everything a kind of holding space that facilitates growth, healing. And for us to take the Goddess Bhuvaneshwari into ourselves, for us to become her, which is one of the aims of tantric practice, they say worship goddess by becoming goddess, that becoming Bhuvaneshwari is becoming one who can literally hold space for ourselves and others' transformation. And, of course, meditation is one of the keys to that space. Finding presence in ourselves through meditation is one of the keys to that space. But there is much more about that. You know, we need communities, we need the regard of others, we need a kind of reflection, which is the way in which we hold space for one another. So let's say the human face of Bhuvaneshwari, the way in which we can come to know goddess by becoming goddess, is to consider that one of our dharmas in this universe is to be able to hold space for others' growth and love and creativity. And holding space, which is, of course, become a sort of a buzzword in the contemporary spiritual world, which we often don't really know what it means to hold space, but it actually means something quite specific. And it's something that we can cultivate. It's an ability to fully present in a non-judgmental way with the intention of totally showing up for a situation for another person without an agenda of our own. And that, I think, is really the quality of the Bhuvaneshwari energy. There is no personal egoic agenda. She's simply there embracing us with the intention for love to be held and evoked. So to hold space, to be Bhuvaneshwari, is a way of expanding your awareness so that your presence can become a kind of protective cocoon that allows growth to occur in situations in which growth may not occur without us, without that space. And I've found that to actually conceive of yourself as Bhuvaneshwari herself, as the space of consciousness, both in your interactions with yourself and your interactions with others, is an incredibly powerful act, and one that is the, I would say, the foundational situation in which miracles occur, in which everything changes, everything shifts. It's almost as though we don't have to do anything except hold that regard. And of course, it's what great healers do. One of my friends, who's a cranial sacral therapist, says that the big breakthrough in cranial sacral therapy happened when practitioners started to realize that they didn't have to manipulate the energy in the spinal column, the cerebral spinal fluid, which cranial sacral therapy claims or intends to allow to shed its blocks and flow. The practitioner didn't have to do anything to make that happen. The practitioner just had to hold space, to hold presence, and the cerebral spinal fluid will naturally align. And this is really what the Bhuvaneshwari energy allows for us, and it's what we are going to work with more deeply during the week to come. So we're going to do a process. You might want to stand up, shake yourself out, and, you know, just take yourself, you know, call up some physical energy in your body. And as you're doing it, I'd like to ask you to bring up something in your life or something in yourself that feels shadowy. I mean, let's just go for it. Just consider one of the qualities in yourself, one of the triggers, one of the trigger ways you get triggered and experience yourself in a less than optimal way, whether it's when you're irritable, when you're angry, when your nervous system feels so fried that you're absolutely sensitized to the situation around you. Just consider a quality in yourself that you would like to grow up, you know, whether it's allowing your anger to be pacified or allowing your worry to be pacified or strengthening your sensitivity, whatever it is, whatever the quality is that you would like to be transformed. So just bring that to mind. I know many of us have a few of them, so pick one. And if you can't think of something right off the bat, just ask yourself, what is there that I'd like to have transformed or assimilated or transmuted? And as you bring up that quality or situation, see if you can find where in your body, what part of your body becomes most activated as you bring it up. You know, for many of us, the feeling of anxiety is often in the solar plexus. Sometimes it's in the face. Sometimes it's just a feeling of tension. The feeling of anger, you know, might be present in the heart, or it might feel like a, you know, like a hot energy that that you sense in your face, in your cheeks. So bringing that up, just let it be there and let yourself feel into the body. Close your eyes. And imagine that the goddess Bhuvaneshwari is now sitting in front of you, in the air. And again, it's very important to realize you don't have to do a visual. You can just have the intention that Bhuvaneshwari be present, because honestly, in this vortex that we are creating together, she's very, very present. So your job is just to acknowledge that she's here, that she's available. She's luminous. She's warm. She glows. She's completely beaming unconditional affection towards you. She's surrounding you. She's embracing you. And you draw in this sense of the goddess's presence, feeling that her form with all its sparkling luminosity is becoming a space that holds you, that holds your issue, your emotion. Just allow it and you to be held in the space of Bhuvaneshwari's presence, which is the space of your own awareness in its most loving transformational form. Notice that if your mind gets distracted, or you start thinking about it, or if an insight arises and you want to go with the insight, just bring your awareness back into this felt sense of Bhuvaneshwari's presence and see if you can bring it into your body. See if you can feel the space that you became aware of in your body when you first became present to this energy that you're working with. And perhaps you can have the feeling, the awareness, the thought that you are surrounded and permeated by the holding energy, the sacred holding intimate power of the Divine Mother as Bhuvaneshwari, the lady who holds the worlds. That you as an individual that this situation or these feelings are completely embraced and accepted, that her Shakti is holding space for you entirely, holding you in your beauty, in your vulnerability, in your discomfort, in your gnarliness. That you are fully accepted by the universe, who is goddess. Just let yourself receive that unconditional acceptance, that unconditional embrace, that profound permission. And if it feels right, let yourself inhale the presence of the goddess Bhuvaneshwari into your heart as though you're taking in this embrace of energy into yourself. Take a seat there. And just allow the seed syllables of the mantra to flow with the breath. Om Shrim Hrim Shrim. Om Shrim Hrim Shrim. Om Shrim Hrim Shrim Bhuvaneshwaryai Namaha. She who holds you, she who embraces you, she whose mystery you are the incarnation of, she whose intimate presence holds all that can be imagined, and is even at this moment allowing your body-mind to let go of whatever is within it that is obstructive or painful. Allowing you to let go of it because she so fully accepts it and so fully accepts you. Aum Shrim 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 Bhuvaneshwaryai Namaha. So we're going to have some time for questions. And Deb, are you with us? Yes, you are. I see you. So can you tell everyone what to do in order to raise your hand? Basically,
yeah.
Deb is going to. Perfect.
Yeah. To if you just raise your hand, you just push star 2. And I will unmute you, and you'll be able to ask your questions. And if anybody has any questions that are on our webcast, you can use the little fill-in form, and I will pass that question on. So it's star 2 if you want to ask a question. Oh, and we have some. We have someone from Costa Rica.
Oh, cool.
Go ahead and speak up. We're not hearing you. You might. Do you have yourself on mute?
Lucia.
And we're not hearing you for some reason.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, hi, Sally. Hi, Deb.
How are you, sweetie?
Good. My question is about her shadow side. Does she have well, I imagine she does, but what is it?
That's a great question. The shadow of Bhuvaneshwari is a kind of deep passivity. So, you know, she is the yin feminine, so the light side of the yin feminine is the holding space. The dark side of the yin feminine is the smother mother. You know, and this inertia and passivity. And there's a there's a way that I have sometimes experienced the shadow side of Bhuvaneshwari as a kind of sticky, stuck insistence that nothing change. So, in other words, because she is acceptance, she accepts everything, and then she doesn't really do anything about it. So for example, in the situations in life where action is called for, if you're stuck in the Bhuvaneshwari energy, it becomes very hard to act. You become overly yin. You become overly passive. So I would say that that's the sort of deepest way in which we experience her shadow side. So, Lucia, does that answer your question?
Yes. I don't know if you can still hear me, but it does.
Now I can hear you. Yes.
It does. Thank you. Yes. I was wondering about that because she sounded so amazing. And I'm like, there has to be some part of this that's a bit sticky. So thank you for that.
Yeah. Well, you know, in shadow, everything, one of the ways to understand the shadow of divine beings is to consider what the excess of the quality would feel like, would be like. So in her case, the excess of the quality is holding. And a holding that, let's say, stops the creativity that should be inherent in it. So thank you for that question.
Thank you.
And we have a person in Eugene.
Yes.
Hi, Sally. It's Wendy.
Hi.
How are you, Wendy?
Hi. Great.
So nice to hear you and to feel the beauty of this group together again. Such a relief.
Yeah, so true.
And actually, it was Lucia's question that made me think of this one, because I was trying to listen to this class while I was flying from Seattle. And so in the interim, when I lost everybody, I was reading Christopher Wallace's book about the fivefold act. And and then you had said something before I lost you about how Bhuvaneshwari is that fivefold, is that chitti of the fivefold act. And so now I'm wondering, like, what he said in the book, or what I just grasped the first time, is this idea that everything that we manifest in our life, the good, the bad, the ugly, the sweet, is the consciousness working through us. But actually the tension between how we think it should be and how it is that the shadow then? Is it that space between?
Well, the tension that we create by imagining that things should be different and worrying that things should be different, it's actually not so much a Bhuvaneshwari quality. We'll go into a little bit about that later on in the class. But the thing about the fivefold act, which is, and to try to explain this to the whole class is a little bit daunting with the amount of time we have, but the understanding about the fivefold act is that consciousness is constantly creating things, sustaining them for a while, dissolving them, concealing its real nature, and then revealing unity to itself. So, and that is always going on in consciousness. In other words, your mind is constantly coming up with thoughts. The thought will stay for a while, then it will dissolve, as we practiced a little bit today, and in the exercise before the last one. And in our ordinary state, the mind conceals the thought. So, you know, for example, if you have a thought like, I hate George, just to pluck a name out of the hat, and the thought dissolves, and you haven't consciously recognized it as an energetic arising within consciousness, that thought, "I hate George," will be concealed inside the field of your mind, and at some later point will come up as a charge.
Right, but then is that concealed in Bhuvaneshwari? I mean, is she holding
it's concealed in Bhuvaneshwari. When Bhuvaneshwari is manifesting in her mayic form as our dualistic mind, the moment recognition happens, which is what we just did. It was more powerful for some than for others, but the moment that consciousness recognizes that whatever is arising within it is a part of its own field, then the charge dissipates, and it literally becomes, it's like duality dissolves into unity.
So
that's the grace aspect of it. Yeah, the revelation, the revelatory aspect of it, and the way she manifests grace is through this powerful acceptance, this powerful mm-hmm. embrace, which is in and of itself, I would say, in my experience, one of the most liberating aspects of, one of the most liberating experiences you can have in looking at yourself is just to realize that you're loved, you're accepted, you're held.
Right.
And then, your I hate George thought can dissolve in that overall feeling of acceptance because you're also accepting George. So, if you see what I mean.
No, that's very helpful. Thank you.
Good. Okay. Thank you for asking the question.
Yeah, no, thank you. And I just miss everybody. I just miss everybody being together. So thank you.
Well, here we are, Wendy. Isn't that so great? Yeah.
Sally, we have a question from somebody on the webcast. Christine says, first she says hi, and then she says she's been installing the goddesses into different areas of her body for many years, especially with breath.
Fantastic.
And she says, I asked for her help, support, etc. I often feel her moving, breathing my body. I'm wondering if you have any opinions about the importance of an at the end of a meditation or session, seeing her leaving as well. Is it important to bring closure to this sort of merging?
Boy, that is a really good question, and I appreciate your asking it. So in classical tantric practice, when you do a formal invocation of the goddess and you bring her forth, which, in formal tantric practice, people often do that by installing their own prana and their own shakti in an icon, in a murti, in a picture. And when we do a practice like installing the goddess in our own body, it's really as we're really asking her to support our body being self-recognized as the form of goddess, which is a very, it can be an extremely powerful and profound meditation practice. So, yes, it's very good to demarcate the end of your practice session. And, traditionally in formal practice, you would actually imagine yourself bowing to the goddess, thanking her for being present, and, inviting her to leave. And one of the reasons why we're supposed to do this in formal ritual practice is so that when we then go on to, our ordinary life and lose it and scream at our kids, etc., we're not sort of subjecting the goddess to our mundane activities. So that said, and it's a good practice to do, I have to say that I don't do that. I feel that when Goddess comes alive in my body and I can feel her presence very strongly, that what I've discovered is that intense sense of Goddess presence, of having installed Goddess, will naturally kind of slip away in the course of life, and that for me, one of the, let's say, most desired outcomes of installing the Goddess is to actually be able to feel Goddess presence while I'm cooking, while I'm working, while I'm walking, while I'm eating. So I would say that as you install Goddess in your body, you might practice not deinstalling her and notice what happens. The only, I would say, glitch in this practice is that when you have installed a powerful sense of Goddess presence or of mantra in your body, and you then go on to the ordinary distracted behavior which most of us get into in the course of life, we can start taking that Goddess presence or that mantric presence for granted, and so it stops feeling so uniquely special. So that's something to look at. You know, if you're slipping into kind of mundanizing the sense of mantric presence in your body, or if you're noticing that there's a certain, let's call it Goddess ego, that's arising, which is something I think many of us recognize. You know, it's that, oh my God, I'm so filled with Goddess, I'm so cool, I'm so special. That if that starts to happen, then it's a very good idea to, you know, to actually thank Goddess and let her go. So again, thank you for that question. So we have a couple minutes, so we could take one more question if anyone has one.
Oh, I have one from Elizabeth in New York. This is a follow-up to Lucia's question. Which Goddess energy or energies could be invoked to balance the shadow side without disrespecting her presence?
You mean to balance Bhuvaneshwari's shadow side?
Yes.
Durga. Durga. One of the reasons that I like to teach Durga and Bhuvaneshwari sort of back to back is that they do have very different energetic manifestations. Durga being very active, you know, very very intense. Bhuvaneshwari being much more mellow so if you're feeling stuckness or passivity with Bhuvaneshwari, or with that shadow side of the accepting, embracing, motherly self, then invoke the active Goddess, the active feminine, the dynamic Goddess, the fierce Goddess, and that should break up the stuckness. And I would say that because the Bhuvaneshwari energy can actually metabolize anything, including her own shadow. Another way to work with the shadow side of Bhuvaneshwari is to embrace that. You know, in other words, to consciously hold space for stuckness. And in my experience, it's sometimes more powerful and more effective to hold space for your own inertia, to hold space for your own numbness, while exploring it with your attention, than trying to actively do something to make it go away. And that said, you know, there are many interventions that we can do when we feel stuck, including taking a brisk walk or doing yoga, or something very, very physically active. So in in practice, in, you know, in recognizing and working with what we could call the shadow or mayic side of a goddess energy, consider whether you want to take the active light side of her even farther, rather than, you know, than imagining yourself bringing in another manifestation, another face of the goddess. So those are two suggestions. One is invoke Durga or Kali, and the other is just hold more space, because numbness, stuckness is actually an arising within consciousness, and it too will dissolve if you make space for it. So,
yep.
And again,
we have one more question, if I can sneak that in,
okay.
If that's okay.
Sure.
Barry asks, what is the difference between being aware of goddess presence and awareness of consciousness, which is available all the time?
Well, actually the answer to that question is, how is it for you? I can tell you how I experience it. Awareness of consciousness, or awareness of awareness, which is, as you say, present all the time, it doesn't give you an immediate experience of shakti, of rasa, of juiciness. It's often said that the Shiva energy, the divine masculine energy within this system, as Tantra describes it, is the energy of the witness who is inactive unless shakti has been kindled, has been manifest. So and I don't know, I won't say this is true for you, but in my experience with myself and for many people, the practice of being aware of awareness, it often can become kind of dry, because the felt sense of goddess presence is also the felt sense of the shakti, of the rasa, of the juiciness, of the excitement, of the tenderness, of the active love inside awareness. And so that I would say the two have a different emotional flavor, so to speak. They're both very effective at different moments, and marrying pure consciousness and goddess, the felt sense of shakti, is incredibly powerful and important thing that we are all practicing for, such that we can be aware of awareness, we can be in witness consciousness, and also feel the dance of goddess going on inside that Shiva consciousness, that pure awareness. And I suggest experimenting and finding how it feels to you. Because at some point in the state of tantric enlightenment or tantric, full tantric awakening, there's no separation. You know, the awareness and shakti are completely merged and married. But most of us aren't there yet. Most of us are essentially segueing back and forth between the kind of wide witness experience, if you've cultivated awareness of awareness, and the very empowering, because that's what goddess is. She empowers us. She empowers our divine qualities, the empowering quality that comes when we tune into goddess. So again, thank you for that. These are great questions. And in order to not break our contract of ending on time, we are going to bring the Q&A to a close. And if you have other questions that you would like answered, please send them to the listserv. And I will do my best to answer them. And you'll also have the advantage of the insight of the other the other practitioners who are part of this course. So thank you so much for being here and for practicing. And let's just take a moment to find the heart space, find the breath. Feel the vast, accepting womb of Goddess holding the space that allows whatever you're experiencing at this moment to be known, seen, and felt. Remember also that the Goddess energy is not simply a witness. She's also utterly dynamically implicated in every movement of the mind, in every sensory experience. It's all her dance. And if you can just take a moment to recognize both the holding energy of Goddess and the active dance that manifests within her, close your eyes, allow the breath to flow as Om Shrim Hrim Shrim Bhuvaneshwaryai Namaha. Om Shrim Hrim Shrim Bhuvaneshwaryai Namaha. Om Shrim Hrim Shrim Bhuvaneshwaryai Namaha. Namaste. Have a wonderful evening. And your homework will come tomorrow, and as will the MP3 of this call. So much love to all of you. Good night.